Good morning, everyone, again, and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It is Friday, December 23rd, 2022, and we have two cases scheduled for oral argument this morning, this being the second case on our calendar today. As already stated, I am Sarah Wheelock, and I'm presiding on a panel today with Judges Renee Werke and Tracy Smith. We're holding our hearing today via zoom.gov, and I'm going to address a few matters before we begin. Oral arguments are recorded by the court, and the recordings of these arguments are generally available on the within 24 hours on the Court of Appeals website, which is also on the Minnesota Judicial Branch's website. I also note that our appellate rules prohibit anyone from making an audio or video recording of oral argument unless you've received permission from the court at least 24 hours in advance and have agreed to comply with specific conditions as established by the Minnesota Supreme Court. So with that, Marshall, will you please call the second case before us this morning?
Calling case A22-0778, Pamela Jean Anderson et al. Respondents versus Amanda Renee Biatine, respondent below, and Hucheme Iloganese Biatine, appellant.
Thank you. Counsel, there is a clock in one square of your screen. It should be in the upper left corner. That will reset according to the time that you have available for your argument. I ask each counsel to introduce yourself at the beginning of the argument so that our recording is clear. Please pronounce your name and the name of your client, and how you'd like us to refer to you and your client during today's argument. Please also mute yourself, but leave your video on when not speaking. And if either of you has any technological difficulties during this argument, please let me know right away, and we will pause and try and help because we want to ensure that we hear from both of you. So with that, counsel for appellant, there's 15 minutes on the clock, and you may begin when you are ready.
Thank you. May it please the court, this is John Jesperson, and I am appearing on behalf of and represent Hucheme Biatine, who is the appellant in this proceeding. I obviously am familiar with the court's rules for appellate argument and procedure and presume that the entire file before the court has been reviewed and that the court has read or has access to the briefs, and so I don't want to belabor the statement of facts and issues that are already set forth in writing. Instead, my purpose today is to really to highlight what I think is the issue that sort of lurks below the surface of this case, the legal issue that lurks below the surface of this case, that is effectively implied in the matters that are argued in both of the parties' briefs. And I want to highlight that issue today. And in doing so, I will be specifically referring to the United States Supreme Court case Santosky, which we cite in our brief. On first blush, that case may seem an odd one to cite in a case like this, because the issue in that case before the U.S. Supreme Court had nothing to do, at least on its face, with the issues that are before the court today. Specifically in Santosky, the U.S. Supreme Court was asked to decide whether or not a standard of proof that was used by New York for the purpose of determining when parental rights could be terminated was sufficient to satisfy the requirements of the Constitution. Ultimately, in that particular case, the court commented that the standard of proof that was employed, that the court found, which was the lowest possible standard of proof, was insufficient to warrant the termination of parental rights under New York's law and under the United States Constitution. Now, that being said, what's lurking beneath that case is an issue that is in many respects very similar to the one that is before the court now. In Santosky, when the court was discussing the question of the burden of proof that the parties would have to meet in order to sustain a termination of parental rights, the court recognized that within the burden of proof, there is an inherent issue, an inherent problem. And the court basically noted that there was a disparity between the parties in terms of their access to information, their access to parties and other resources that would allow them to effectively prosecute their case. In effect, what the court concluded was that a standard of proof really has more to do with just the threshold that the court has to reach, but also identifies the availability of information to the parties that the court would ultimately have to consider. The court commented that a standard of proof, by its very terms, demands consideration of the quantity rather than the quality of evidence that may misdirect the fact finder in a marginal case, but more important, noted, the primary witnesses at the hearing will be the agency's own professional caseworkers whom the state has empowered both to investigate the family situation and to testify against the parents.
Indeed, with that backdrop and with knowledge that this is not a termination of your client's parental rights as father to the child, what is it that you're claiming he was denied access to? He had his own therapist, the child had a therapist, and you're arguing that his therapist was to be the decider of when reunification or visitation would take place. I don't see that in the order. So I want you to tell me, based on the notions you brought forward, what is it that your client claims he was deprived of?
Well, what he's been deprived of is any access to information, whether directly from a therapist. He has had no contact with his son now for more than six years.
And we understand that, but in 2020 in June, the respondents were awarded sole legal and physical custody. So I guess what I'm saying is that order was not appealed. So that is what's out there. So specifically, I need to know what it is that he claims he's missing. I mean, we have therapy going on and we have someone trying to decide what's best for this child as far as having a relationship with the father figure in this case. So what, don't just say records. What is it that you're saying you have not been able to access that interferes with your client's rights at this point?
The only information that my client has access to or has had access to is basically that information he can get directly from a medical file, for example, from the Mayo Clinic, where they maintain records of counseling and therapy, particularly by a treating psychiatrist. Beyond that, he does not have contact with the child's therapist directly or indirectly. And the only information that he's able to obtain is that which he can glean from a medical file, for example, or a school record. Since he has no access to any other information, the question is, on what basis can he inquire of the court whether or not the child's parenting time with him would be, quote, therapeutically appropriate? The difficulty in this case is that the order established a process in which it's not clear either what the standard is that's going to be used to determine when parenting time resumes and under what conditions, although the court ordered that reunification was appropriate more than 4 years ago.
Mr. Jesperson?
Yes.
Before you move on to discussing the standard and whether your arguments about that being ambiguous about the therapeutic threshold, what you said he has access to medical files and school records. What other records or what other information do you posit he would need that he isn't getting? What specifically is he in need of?
Well, ultimately, he would need to have access through in a therapeutic setting to his son. Otherwise, what's occurring here is that opinions are being made or drawn, or conclusions are being drawn without ever having seen Armand Biotin with his son over a period now of more than 6 years. Ultimately, in the absence of any information and in the absence of any information regarding ongoing current therapy over the last 2 years, Mr. Biotin finally brought a motion requesting that parenting time in some form be ordered.
Well, let's not set aside the fact we have findings of significant domestic abuse in this case, and we can't treat this blindly. We have a judge in this case who's trying to rely on expert reports to determine at what point this child is ready or even willing to have a relationship with his father. Doesn't the court have to constantly look at the child, and was there not an opportunity for letter writing at the child's initiative?
Yes, the problem is that there are no reports, there are no statements of an opinion about the therapeutic appropriateness of parenting time by anyone that is built on or references anything that is remotely contemporary to today. So the only information Mr. Biotin could point to is his son's school records, which show that the child does not need any educational services and does not have any behavioral issues or problems.
Let me ask you this question.
Yes.
I'm going to say it very simplistically. What do you want this court to do? What do you think should be done? What can be done with the concern of the child's emotional health?
Our position is this: that when Mr. Biotin went to court seeking to establish parenting time, the only evidence of record that is contemporary in any stretch is that from his last treating psychiatrist, and who saw him in September of 2022, as I recall, but it's in the record, and the school records. The treating psychiatrist at Mayo, who saw Easton, did not observe any of the conditions that were enumerated in his report for the purpose of getting, for example, educational services through the school. None of the issues that were supposedly there to indicate the child had problems were identified, and there is no record of ongoing current counseling or therapy. Moreover, the school did not have any records of problems with the child in any way, shape, or form. In the absence of any other evidence, what we asked the court to do was establish ultimately some minimum amount of parenting time, because now delay has become in and of itself the issue. And no one has rendered an opinion about what is or is not therapeutically appropriate for this child over the course of more than 2 years.
But then, so, Mr. Jesperson, that's my question. What is it that you want our court to do? What can we do? We're a reviewing court.
Correct. What we are asking for is one of two. Ultimately, we would be asking for a remand with instructions that the court is to essentially follow the spirit and terms of the order that it filed in 2018, in which it identified an individual, namely Dr. Joseph Reed, for the purpose of conducting reunification therapy. An individual is identified.
As I understand, that order said in conjunction with, or in concert with, or something like that, with the child's therapist. Are you saying that he had the sole authority over the court in determining when visitation would occur?
I'm suggesting that he was, the way the order was drafted, it was contemplated that he would be the individual who would bring the parent and child together and ultimately make a recommendation for what would happen going forward.
The other thing that bothers me is we're using terms that come from termination of parental rights. We're talking about reunification, but I want to remind everyone that sole physical and legal custody is with the respondents, with the grandparents. So we are talking visitation, are we not? We're not really
Yes.
talking reunification in the sense that a child that has a child protection matter. You agree with that, right?
Yes, I do. My point is, however, that the practical consequence of what has occurred over the last 6.5 years is that there has been no contact. In all of the years I've been doing this, I've never seen a case where contact has been entirely and completely suspended for such an extraordinary period of time, and where nothing has occurred despite an order for reunification of the relationship between the child and his father, where nothing has moved forward. And I would note that the only therapist the child has seen is one that the court determined was not suitable for the purpose of doing reunification therapy. The
Mr. Jesperson, I'm curious to know what your understanding is of how the global pandemic and the relative resulting in unavailability of therapists and availability to meet in person, and the how the needs have gone up, and we only have a limited number of therapists available in the world, how that plays into this, that perhaps by nobody's fault, there's been an inability to obtain therapy for the child due to circumstances beyond our control, beyond anybody's control. How does that affect your argument?
I think the answer is that today we're conducting this hearing by remote technology. We've been using Zoom and other remote technology for the last 3 to 4 years. It seems to me that it would have been possible to orchestrate something, and this was supposed to have begun well before the pandemic even started. The fact of the matter is that what has occurred in this case, the very simple truth is that we have a child who has been effectively entirely disconnected from his cultural and racial heritage and his father's family, all of whom are here. And the difficulty is that Mr. Biotin, who has limited access to anything because he can't have contact with his son, nor can his family have contact with his son, is limited to what he can glean from the record. And when we went to court, the only objective evidence of record that we were able to locate determined that the child did not suffer from any of the conditions that would even warrant a so-called 504 plan, which is less extensive than an IEP. And more than that, the school itself had no record of any need for support services for this child based on his education, based on his emotional condition or behavior. That's the only objective evidence of record. When the respondents responded to the trial court, they supplied a great deal of information, basically all of it from 2015, and none of which answered the question of today, what is therapeutically appropriate? We are simply asking that the matter be remanded with instructions to facilitate some kind of contact so that a meaningful restoration of parental rights can visitation, parenting time can occur.
Thank you, Mr. Jesperson. That time has expired. Thank you for pausing. Yeah. And so we will turn to opposing counsel, Ms. Arnold, for her argument. 15 minutes is on the clock, and you may begin when you are ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court.
Sorry, I'm going to pause you there. Mr. Jesperson, if you could just put yours on mute while we hear from opposing counsel. Thank you so much. Please go ahead.
May it please the court. My name is Valerie Arnold, and I am here appearing on behalf of the respondents, Patrick and Pamela Anderson. And per the court's request, the court may refer to me by Ms. Arnold. The issue before the Court of Appeals is whether the district court abused its discretion in issuing its 2022 parenting time order. As a preliminary matter, I want to state that the factual summary upon which counsel relies in supporting his argument for a remand is simply and clearly inaccurate. With respect to the information that has been available to Mr. Biotin, he has had the information that any parent is able to have, which includes the medical and educational information that counsel cited. In addition, as set forth in the court's March 2022 order, he has also had access to the extensive information that the court gathered and relied upon in making its decision, including the multiple reports by the special master, Dr. Kirsten Lisney, specifically cited in the March 22 order, the June 15th, 2020 order, which led to the report and recommendations of Dr. Lisney, and subsequent orders in February and updates in February and June and updated information in November of 2021.
Ms. Arnold, I might have misunderstood, easily could be, but I had understood Mr. Jesperson to be saying that he did not have access to the child's therapist records. I mean, acknowledge the Mayo records, et cetera. Are there therapist records to which he did not have access?
I'm not aware of any order prohibiting access to therapy records. I think they have been obtained in the past. I would also submit that in terms of communication with the child, there have been letters going back and forth. There has been the possibility of telephone contact. And the court itself in the March 2022 order relied on current information. Specifically, I would note finding 21. The court cites the September 24th, 2021 medical records from the Department of Psychiatry and Psychology, which discuss the breakdown that the child had previously experienced and that the child continues to experience stress when he is exposed to pictures of his father, and that causes trauma. So there's current evidence of trauma related to the child having reunifying with his father beyond what has been currently ordered.
Ms. Arnold, could you explain? I mean, I know I have the order and I'm looking at it, the most recent one. Could you just explain, though, what is the, I mean, like happening now and in the future, you know, like, let's assume that we don't, I mean, if for example, we were not to reverse and remand as the appellant asked, what's meant to happen relative to the parent-child, the parenting time and parent-child relationship here?
Certainly, Your Honor. So if this matter proceeds as per the court's order, Dr. Lisney would complete her review and update to the court to make recommendations. The next phase was for a therapy different from the individual therapy to specifically address the issue of the resistance or the avoidance of contact. And so the relief directed by the court was targeted to explore what is the blockage, what is the impasse in terms of the child's ability to be able to move forward. So, but for this appeal, we would be moving along that path. From a legal standpoint, I think it's also important to understand that the 2018 order that counsel cites in support of a decision that would remand to have Dr. Reed be the one to oversee the reintroduction phase, I would note that the court's order of June 4th, 2020 specifically found that because this issue had been raised before, that the court believed that the minor child and Mr. Byatton must have contact, but planned by a qualified professional who does not have a relationship with either party. So that June 2020 order, which was the order that contemplated the intent to change course to due to the complexity of the situation and the minor child's needs, contemplated the appointment of a special master, rejected the idea of Dr. Reed taking the lead on this. And I would note that one factor that has been continuous in the court's decisions, whether it be the 2018 decision, 2020, or the current 2022 order, that consistent with the parenting time statute, that parenting time would proceed consistent with the child's best interest, and that would be when the child was ready to move forward. And so this June 2020 order that that changed the process to be led by the special master, not only was this order and the subsequent orders not appealed by Mr. Biotin, but in this specific order, the court had given the parties, separate from an appeal right, the opportunity to object to the process and object to the special master process. In the order, paragraph 8, that's on page 10, the parties had until June 11th, 2020 to object. Otherwise, the court would deem their objection waived. They did not object, and ultimately, they did not appeal. And so the process that the court has established is specifically tailored to move forward parenting time in a way that is child-focused and consistent with the requirements of 518.175, which require it to be consistent with the child's best interests. I do also want to note or to talk a little bit about this kind of attempt to compare this situation to a situation where there is some kind of deprivation of a parental right or of a custodial right. The issue here is not, we're not talking about an entitlement, right? We're talking about the best interests of a child. And with respect to those extraordinary circumstances that end up or result in a loss of physical or legal custody or a restriction of parenting time, I would also note that the court has made prior findings that, again, were not appealed. For example, in the 2018 order where respondents were granted sole legal custody, the court cites the NAK case and makes specific findings as to the extraordinary circumstances of this case. 2016, the loss of physical custody, the court cites the extraordinary circumstances of this case. And similarly, with respect to parenting time, there are extraordinary circumstances. The claim that has been articulated today before this court that there aren't any school issues, that there aren't any other issues, it is just patently false. This is a child, and the court, far from abusing its discretion, has exercised its discretion with the utmost care and concern for this child. The child, and this is noted in the 2018 order, has multiple diagnoses, which include an adjustment disorder with mixed disturbance of emotions and conduct, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms, oppositional defiant disorder, intermittent explosive disorder symptoms, and that the record is replete that this child has been traumatized by many things, most recently, the loss of his mother. Although she wasn't a custodian, she is someone who was very important in this child's life. And this was yet another trauma. And so the request here is to say that the court's detailed findings going over the history of this case, appointing a special master, which in and of itself is really extraordinary. It's not a common occurrence in family court matters where a licensed psychologist is appointed as a neutral to assist and inform the court on how to proceed. There simply isn't a basis to say that this court abused its discretion. this order is supported by the facts of this case. This order is supported by the law. And as such, we believe that there should be no remand other than to allow the court to continue its important work, which ironically ended up being derailed by this appeal, to let the special master do her work, to allow the therapist who would be working with the minor child separate from his individual therapist to focus on what the special master had recommended, and to allow this matter to proceed in a child-focused manner and in a way that is required by Minnesota Statute 518.175. Thank you.
It doesn't look like we have any other questions for you, Ms. Arnold. Thank you for your argument. We will put 5 minutes on the clock for rebuttal, and we will turn back to Mr. Jesperson for the final word. You may begin when you're ready, and remember to unmute.
My apologies. Thank you. Despite the fact that there are findings that are made, the question is, where do those findings come from, and what, if anything, supports them? The last motion was supported by two affidavits filed by Mr. Biotine that described the events basically leading up to the time that he filed that motion, which was essentially a period of extraordinary inactivity. The question is, when he brings a motion and asks to either have Dr. Reed, for example, supervise over a reunification process, or simply just to order some kind of, however rudimentary, parenting time, the fact of the matter is, the question becomes, who has the burden of going forward with some evidence, and who has the burden of proving something, and what are they to prove? The question here is, well, parenting time is appropriate and should begin when it's, quote, therapeutically appropriate. Nobody knows what that means or who makes that decision. And despite the reference to ongoing therapy and so forth, there is no evidence, in fact, before the court of any ongoing therapy for Easton Biotine at the time we had a motion argument in February of 22. The only party who would have had the capacity to produce a document saying, I don't think it's therapeutically appropriate to proceed at this time in this fashion, is the respondents, and they produced nothing. Instead,
could you not have asked the court for an in-camera review of these documents that we don't know what they say and purportedly you feel are in your client's favor?
Well, we did. We supplied the court with the complete record from Mayo Clinic, which is where the supervising psychiatrist who works with Easton is located, and all of his notes were there. They provided a single page from those records saying, oh, he has this, that, or the other issue. When we looked more closely at the actual medical record from Mayo Clinic, what we discovered is that they had omitted the actual second page of that report, which we provided along with the entire file from Mayo that was submitted as confidential documents. And in the complete record from September 21 of 2021, the physician treating Easton said, Easton does not report symptoms of conduct disorder, substance use or abuse. There have been comments from teachers about an autism spectrum disorder, but the evaluation did not support diagnosis of ADHD. Have not been teachers in the interim to suggest this. He had not been noted to be pronounced hyperactivity, impulsivity, or attention symptoms of a major depressive disorder. Finally, he does not endorse non-suicidal self-injury, self-ideation. The point is that all of the conditions that they're identifying as these are the things that are affecting Easton Biotine were specifically ruled out by the treating psychiatrist who has been overseeing this child for some time. And the record from Mayo itself showed no evidence of ongoing treatment by this physician or anyone else prior to this time. And the only person who has access to Easton and could come forward and say, he has seen this person over this period of time, and this is their conclusion about parenting time and whether it's therapeutically appropriate. The only person who can bring that forward is the respondents, and they brought nothing forward except to reiterate the same objections and concerns that they had in 2015.
So Mr. Jesperson, if I might ask, so just to be clear, and I don't mean to like focus on this so much, are you arguing that there was a therapist with records and you didn't get those records? Or is your argument, no, they didn't apparently have a therapist?
Correct. There was not.
The latter.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. There is nothing in the Mayo record to indicate any kind of ongoing communication with a therapist. Moreover, the only therapist he was reportedly seeing was one that the court specifically concluded was not suitable for making an opinion about reunification. The therapist that they keep referring to is one that was ruled out by the trial court. All Mr. Biotin is trying to do is have some small semblance of a relationship with his son through the most rudimentary of parenting time. And it's fine to talk about the process and about we're going to do this counseling and therapy and this person's going to talk to the other. Pretty soon the process consumes the outcome. And after a period of years, we have a child who has gone from 6 to 14. And in that period of time, he has no relationship of any kind, let alone contact with his father, with his grandmother, with his uncles, aunts, cousins, all of whom were features in his life before all of this started. None. That feature of his life, that cultural component of his life has been entirely excised. And it is, frankly, inappropriate. And that's why I say the burden, if we're going to say we can't proceed, the burden really is on the respondents. And when we put the evidence that was before the court at the last hearing, there is nothing in the record itself that's an actual record from an objective third party that supports any of the findings in the order other than to say, well, in 2015, this, that, or the other thing occurred, and here's what the history has been talking with therapists. Where is the evidence about the child now? And the answer is none other than what we provided, which expressly contradicted the statements that were made by the respondents.
Mr. Jesperson. No, that's okay. I understand you're advocating for your client. I think though that the time has expired. And so we'll end with that unless either of the other judges has another question. Okay. Seeing that there are no other questions, I just want to thank both of the attorneys today for your argument and for your briefing. We understand the importance of this matter to your clients, and we very much appreciate your time and your efforts, and this has been very helpful. The case is submitted. The court will take it under advisement and will issue an opinion in the statutory time period.
Thank you.
Thank you.